Please sit comfortably. Now, as I've said before, over the course of the last 6 months, I've been giving a series of talks on our female Dharma ancestors, the matriarchs of the lineage. Unfortunately, until the last 15 years, their names and discourses and dialogues have been unavailable to us, not yet having been translated from Chinese, Japanese, and Sanskrit. But now, with some research and digging, we can rediscover them and their teachings. So today I'd like to read you a poem from Beata Grant's Daughters of Emptiness, a book I highly recommend, by the 12th century Chan master Miao Sung. She and her sister in the Dharma, Miao Dao, were Dharma heirs of the great Sung period Chan master Da Hui. So I'll read you this poem. Oops. Miao Tsung lived for 75 years from 1095 to 1170. It seems Miao Tsung was a precocious child, and as a teenager, she quite naturally turned to a question: where did this body come from in this life? And after one dies, where will it go? She had a small spiritual opening one day while musing on her personal question, which in some way set the direction for the rest of her life. But before going into her life, I'd like to first read you her poem and comment on it, and then tell you something of her life and spiritual journey. So she wrote, "Suddenly, I have made contact with the tip of the nose, and my cleverness melts like ice and shatters like tiles. What need for Bodhidharma to have come from the West? What a waste for the second patriarch to have paid his respects. To ask any further about what is this and what is that would signal defeat by a regiment of straw bandits. So suddenly, I have made contact with the tip of the nose." This first word clearly locates Miao Sung on the Lin Chi side of the lineage charts. Her first word gets right to the point. We practice hour after hour, month after month, year after year, and our character develops. We become more patient and more enduring. We see, feel, and experience the knotted, tangled vines of our minds again and again. And though in some ways we can do nothing about who we are, how we are, or what we are, by sitting right in the middle of our lives, supported by a practice, supported by a community of way-seeking practitioners, and supported by a teacher, something very small begins to shift gradually. Gradually we begin to feel for ourselves. We begin to stand up into ourselves. We stand by ourselves. This is the beginning of compassion. Although we do begin gradually to feel for ourselves, or maybe just feel, Sometimes we feel compassion for others before we notice for ourselves. We begin to feel and tear for the limping dog. We begin to notice the broken-winged bird or the cat with one mauled eye. Or maybe for the first time we notice and are touched by our sister's tired face, or a friend's rigid back, or the almost hidden gray hair of a neighbor. This practice of coming back again and again tenderizes us, and we naturally become more tender. We soften. Soften into your breath. Soften into your body. Please sit in that soft place that each one of you does have. Softly. Softly. And just by coming back again and again to Mu, to who hears, to breath, with open hands gradually, our hearts begin to tear, they begin to crack, they begin to open. This is, as I said, the character development side of practice. And it is an essential aspect of our Zazen. If this is all that ever happened, I think practice was a success. Yet Zazen, Zen offers, it invites you to take another step, a step off a cliff. On the one hand, Zen is a step-by-step process, slowly evolving, gradually developing. But on the other hand, it is sudden. Your heart breaks open, the sky cracks, and the voiceless voice of the nighthawk obliterates the stars, the moon, and you. The world tumbles and turns, although it never moves. The ancestral teachers, the matriarchs and patriarchs, take your hand, and you walk together. The hair of your eyebrows entangled with theirs, seeing with the same eyes, and hearing with the same ears. This is the birthplace of compassion. Seeing with the same eyes, hearing with the same ears, chewing with the same teeth, moving as one body. And yet, for as special as I just made it sound, Miao Sung says, suddenly I have made contact with the tip of the nose. Suddenly I am connected to the trees, bushes, and grasses. Suddenly I am intimate, intimate with the rocks, stones, and pebbles. Suddenly I am touched and I touch. Another way to say this might be, we suddenly fall in love again for the very first time. We fall in love with ourselves for all we are and for all we can never be. We fall in love with our troubles, our travails, our loneliness, and our suffering. And we fall in love with each other, even within our disappointments, upsets, and disagreements. And we fall in love with the world, for all its terrible beauty and heartbreak, for all its life and death. We fall in love with the sunrises and sunsets, for all its hope and for all its hopelessness. Suddenly, again, for the very first time. Suddenly I make contact, and my cleverness melts like ice and shatters like tiles. Each of us can find our own word for cleverness. Whatever it is that keeps you from fully contacting yourself and the world. My wit, my neediness, my sleepiness, my idiot compassion, my fear, and that thing which keeps us frozen stuck melts. After touching her own native and natural love, Miao Sung seems almost taken aback by the utter ordinariness of the experience. Suddenly I've made contact with the tip of my nose. I am seeing with my eyes. I am chewing with my teeth and hearing with my ears. And it is ordinary because in reality, you had never left. It is ordinary because you are in the original dwelling place. So Miao Sung says with a smile, what need was there for Bodhidharma to have come from the West? Why the long, arduous, and dangerous trip? And again with a smile she says, and what a waste for Hui Ke, the second ancestor, to have gone out of his way to pay his respects. Incidentally, Hui Ke went out of his way to see Bodhidharma, stood in 3 feet of snow to gain entrance to his cave, and then cut off his arm to show his determination. So I guess you could say he went out of his way. Miao Sung again with a half smile is saying, why the big fuss? Why all the coming and going if we've always already arrived? It is right here, before our very eyes. It is the last few drips of last night's first autumn dew. That's all. It is the sigh of this person sitting next to you. It is your wakefulness at 1, and then 2, and then at 3 a.m. And it is my voice, and it is your heartbeat. It is also your sadness and confusion, and it is the chaos and darkness that you might feel on occasion, especially on a retreat with this much sitting, as well as the happiness, joy, and peace. Of course, we prefer the one state of mind over the other, but they all are just that, states of mind infused with light. Suddenly, I have made contact with the tip of the nose. We can say, I suppose, that the sun is always shining, but sometimes there is snow and rain. We can say the sun is always shining, but sometimes there is wind and storm. Sometimes there are bright clouds and sometimes somber, but always the sun is shining, infusing all phenomena with light. This is true even on the darkest night, for it is the sun that lights the moon and stars, and it lights you as you walk and sit and eat and drink and toss back and forth in bed. Miao Sung says, to ask any more about what is this and what is that, would be just as bad as an entire well-equipped and well-trained army signaling defeat to a regiment of straw bandits. says, be quiet. Pay attention. Her Dharma sister, Miao Dao, said, your entire body is eyes. Look. Your entire body is ears. Listen. What else is there to say? What else is there? As I said earlier, it seems Miao Sung was a precocious child. And as a teenager, she quite naturally turned to a question. Where did this body come from in this life? And after one dies, where will it go? She had an insight into her question one day while musing on it and felt at peace. However, she didn't think this type of experience was unusual, assuming that humans, the most conscious of creatures, must all feel like this. So she didn't tell anyone of her experience. Miao Sung, as was the custom for someone of her class, was married off to a scholar official and took up the expected roles of wife and mother. Yet, I imagine her question and insight continued to churn in her, and she wearied of social custom and began to seek a more active spiritual life. Incidentally, I don't think this is an uncommon experience. I imagine most of you at 5 years old, or 10, or 16 had this type of opening. But because it isn't valued in our culture and probably not in your family, it was forgotten. And often we even forget that we forgot. However, I think for many, it directs our lives and it has put you right here, just as it kept Miao Sung walking continually the path of Dharma. I'm not exactly sure of the exact sequence of events, but at some point her husband died. And rather than follow the customary rituals and roles required of a widow, she began to seek out Chan masters. And she sought them out not to support them financially, again, which would have been customary, but she sought them out to question and to study and to practice Zazen with them. In one such questioning session, the Chan Master Yuan said, why do you, a delicate lady of the inner quarters, participate in this great hero's work, or practice, or training? Miao Sung said, has the Buddha Dharma ever made a distinction between man and woman, between monk or nun, monastic or layperson, who are identical in their characteristics or form? The teacher, noticing that she had some insight, probed her with a question, saying, what is the Buddha? This mind is the Buddha. What do you make of that, young lady? Miao Sung replied, I've heard of you for a long time, old master, but I'm disappointed to find that you still say that kind of thing. The question and response went on from here. And I'll read you some of that, but this is an important point that the question and response went on. Keep this in mind if ever you read the current book Zen Women by Grace Shirison, whose truncated dialogue allows her to make an interpretive point to substantiate her theses at the expense of the true Dharma dialogue. It continued on this way. The master said, You've not fully arrived yet. And Miao Sung hit the incense stand with her hand. The master said, as long as there is an incense stand, you may hit it. But what if there is none? So he asks, what will you do when there is nothing at all? What will you do in the middle of the darkest night, when all the stars have fallen from the sky, and there is only black, black? Then what? Miao Sung immediately walked out. I'd say this makes sense, but is much too logical. The Chan master called to her, what principle have you seen that you are thus? Aiken Roshi said, finally, finally he got to the point. And I can only imagine after him saying that, he picked up his bell and rang it. But finally, finally he got to the point. What principle have you seen that you are thus? Miao Sung turned around and said, clearly I see there is not a single thing. I wonder who saw that. Anyway, the dialogue continued on and ended with the teacher admiringly saying, my, you are a real lion cub. Sometimes folks find this style of dialogue to be too argumentative, combative, or filled with one-upmanship. However, there is another way to think of this type of dialogue. When a warm wind comes from the south, you put on a raincoat. When from the north, a parka is called for. When the sun comes out, you put on sunblock. When the new moon, you light a candle. A monk asked Yun Men, what is the teaching Shakyamuni presented throughout his life? Yun Men said, one preaching in accord. Or as Aiken Roshi was fond of saying, an apposite word. So this type of dialogue is playful, and it does not let you stick. It asks for and demands movement. Shakyamuni Buddha, if he taught any one thing, he taught that it was to respond appropriately within the arising conditions. In each moment, a new, freshly cut rose branch planted in the soil. And as I said the other night, we don't only plant the cut rose branch during zazen, kinhin, and formal meals. We plant it up to and right next to our beds as we go to sleep for the evening, acknowledging that even our sleep and dreams are a field to cultivate and practice in. So now I'd like to end this talk by reading you another poem by the Chan master Miao Sung, but first with a short preface which will help you understand the allusion in the last line. And first I have one other note. Miao Sung started teaching Chan in her early 60s and ordained to be a nun when she was 63. And she spent the next 12 years of her life teaching women and men, teaching nuns and monks. So this is the preface to her poem. Once Chuang Chao dreamt he was a butterfly flitting and fluttering around, happy with himself and doing as he pleased. He didn't know he was Chuang Chao. Suddenly he woke up, and there he was, solid and unmistakably Chuang Chao. But he didn't know if he was Chuang Chao, who had dreamt he was a butterfly, or a butterfly dreaming he was Chuang Chao. Sun Miao Sung wrote, "A leaf of a boat drifts across the endless expanse of water, lifting and dancing the oars to a different melody now. Clouds on the mountains, moon over the sea, all tossed away. This done, Chiang Chao's butterfly dream will last forever." So let me read it one more time. "A leaf of a boat drifts across the endless expanse of water, lifting and dancing the oars to a different melody now. Clouds on the mountain, moon over the sea, all tossed away. This done, Chuang Chao's butterfly dream will last forever." Okay, thank you.